Hello and welcome to the podcast Fully Expressed with your host, John Denbeck. This is the show that brings you stories from those who express themselves through work and faith.
Hey guys, it's John. Welcome back to Fully Express in season two. And we are already off to a great start. And on today's podcast, we have John O'Leary. And I am so, look him up. He's an author, he's a speaker. And I had the great privilege of connecting with him at a conference. I want to tell you, he changed my life. And if you give him a chance, he's going to change yours too. And he's got some resources. So I'm thankful to have him on. I want to remind you to please to subscribe to Fully Expressed and get the content every month as it downloads to you. And make sure that you check us out at workinfaithmatters.com. But without further ado, I want you to tune in and listen up and quiet the noise around you for my interview with John O'Leary. And I am so glad to have John O'Leary on the podcast, Fully Expressed. John, we had a little bit of talk before the show, but I just want to thank you. We met at a conference. Like I said, I met you from 60 feet away. you necessarily see my face, but at that conference, John, and I'm anxious for you to share with our audience. I mean, I laughed, I cried, and I walked out of there just honestly inspired to live a fuller life. And I reached out to you, and you're so kind and gracious to agree to come on the program. But I want you to spend a few moments to share with our audience, you know, kind of your story. It's an incredible story and inspirational one. And just want to kind of set you up to thank you so much, but just share with us a little bit about, you know, who you are and how you are, where you are.
So first, let me begin with just gratitude. Your listeners may not know this, but it took us quite a while to finally get this thing on. And that is not my MO. I, as a child, required people to say yes in order for me to simply live. And through their example, I'm with you today. Through God's grace, I'm with you today. And so we try to model that today. I looked forward to being with you, and we kept having to push it back. And now finally we connect. So John, it is I, man, my friend, who is grateful to now not be 60 feet away, but far closer as we spend this time together. You asked about who am I today? I'm a dad of four. I'm a husband to one. I'm the son of Susan and Denny. I'm a friend, hopefully, to a whole bunch of folks. And so journeying through life, man. And where you and I met, I know the conference well. We talked about it offline. Yeah. Loved it, had a blast, and now I get to travel the world sharing some of the experiences from my childhood and some of the lessons I've learned that can apply in people's lives.
Yeah, so just for our audience, I mean, for anybody who wants to read more of this story, your book On Fire was a tremendous book. It really touched me deeply, and I just wanted to say, kind of give you, you know, set it up with our audience. Well, you know, how the title of the book come about, and just talk a little bit about that childhood experience that you had to persevere through.
Awesome. So since we're talking about the book, and just to make sure this doesn't come across as braggish, if you have a copy of the book in front of you, like, my picture is not on the front of it. And when we first got the book back from New York, there was a picture of me wearing a suit, tied up, knotted up, everything else, looking like a million bucks, looking with my arms crossed, John, looking at the reader like, look what I've achieved. And perhaps if you read the wisdom in these pages, you too can achieve something fractionally this impressive. And so I wrote them back, and I'm like, man, redo the cover. Like, the book's not about me. And so when they rewrote it, redid the cover, it's white with kind of like, it looks like an explosion of life coming out of the middle of it. And the letters On Fire are, it's called foil wrap. It's kind of an expensive form of ink that looks almost like a mirror. And the idea is when a reader or a future reader grabs the book, they see not how great John O'Leary is, but ultimately they see themselves and how great their story, their life is, and how amazing it can become going forward. So that's the background of the cover. Right. The actual name, the title, On Fire. Well, it's kind of a play on words, but ultimately it's the calling of our lives to be on fire for something bigger than ourselves. So that's really what this thing is. But it's the other side of the story is, as a child, as a 9-year-old, I was in a fire. I experienced what it's like to quite literally be on fire. And what led to that was walking into my parents' garage. Mom and dad were gone. Running a little childhood experiment in my parents' garage, bent over a can of gasoline, tried to pour a little bit of gas on top of this flame. And Johnny, before the liquid even came out of the can, the fumes pulled the flame in, massive explosion, picks me up, launches me 20 feet against the far side of the garage as a 9-year-old. And there I am now on this, in this room, covered in gasoline. And here come the words, on fire, on fire. And so when we were little, we were taught what to do when we're on fire. And all your listeners are saying, dude, stop, drop, and roll. But when you're the one literally on fire, man, you don't stop and drop and roll when you're a kid. You panic and you freak out and you run. And so that is the starting point of this story that would require, in my faith view, God's hand and a whole lot of heroes, celebrities, and the least among us showing up in mighty ways to allow a little boy with no chance at life to take the next right step forward toward life.
Yeah. And during the time that we spent together at the conference, you just talked about appreciating those that made a difference in your lives. And you actually had us take out our phones and text somebody during that time. And if you could just, you know, tell a little bit of the story about somebody that, I mean, you've had a couple of different stories, but somebody that was just inspirational for you to get through that tremendous time of adversity. I mean, you had talked about, I mean, you were very, very close to, I mean, the nurses didn't think you would live. And right. So there was someone who spoke into your life, or several people, and just give us an example of just how an individual can make a difference in the life of another.
Well, and there's so many paths to go down with the question, yeah. Beautifully open-ended as the one you asked. I think it's important to maybe start at the very beginning. And if you want to ask more, please feel free. But I come into this hospital, John, and I am dying, burns on 100% of my body. 87% are third degree. It is fatal. It's fatal 100% of the time, certainly back in 1987, and in all likelihood in 2021, it's just an epic burn. And so I'm laying in this hospital bed, dying with the bright light coming down on me. And as a little guy, the only thought I had was, my dad's going to kill me. You know, my old man, this 41-year-old ancient human being, when he finds out I burnt down the house, will freak out. And that is the only thought I had that morning as a little boy. And then I hear my dad's voice down the hall. He's been called in from the office. He's got a whole lot of emotions, I'm sure, churning through his heart and through his mind. And he's yelling at some nurse, where's my boy, John? Like, where's my boy, John? This type A military veteran guy coming to finish me off, I thought. She guides him back. He pulls back the curtain. He marches in, shoulders back, points down. It says very firmly, John, look at me when I'm talking to you. So I look up, and then he says, I have never been so proud of anyone in my entire life. And my little buddy today, this morning, I am just proud and thrilled to be your dad. And then he added, I love you. I love you, John. I just love you. And there's nothing you can do about it. And John, in hearing these words as a kid, I remember crossing my arms as best I could and shutting my eyes and thinking to myself, oh my gosh, nobody told my dad what happened. The dude does not know. You know, maybe I can get away with it. Maybe my brother Jim's painting the house right now. I don't know, man. But what I realized in time as a child, and certainly now as a man and as a father, is the power of grace and ultimately what matters in life and what does not. You know, you can rebuild homes, thankfully. But life is far harder to rebuild. And my dad that day just came in as a great leader. He changed from fear into faith and love. And I caught. You know, it did not make 5.5 months in burn care or amputations or skin grafts or daily bandage changes easy. But that vision and that love and that grace that first morning made the journey possible. So you asked for one. That's the first one, but I think it made many of the others possible.
Yeah, that's a tremendous story. I keep referencing back to the conference because it was so impactful to me. But you had shared about your dad, and you had shared, and it was so impactful to me about being grateful. And just and you talked about lessons learned from your dad on being grateful. And I think that ties into this story. I mean, here you are a little boy, and then those lessons come later as your dad goes through trials and difficulties. Mm. But can you just share just a little bit about, you know, about the heart of gratefulness? I'm thinking about this is the holiday season, and, you know, and sometimes we look at what we don't have rather than what we do, and to our shame and as a tragedy. But just talk a little bit about that heart of gratefulness, if you could.
Yeah. I mean, so just beginning with the research, if you Google "does gratitude matter," you will find case study after case study after case study proving the point again and again and again to the degree that it matters. And maybe my favorite's one called the Nun Study. So if you, after this one, just Google Nun Study and be blown away by the degree that it influences the way you show up, the way you treat others, the way you feel about yourself, and the amount of years you have on earth. It's a really, really, really big deal. And rather than just Googling all those studies, let me share with you one more. My dad.
Okay. Yeah.
My dad has had Parkinson's disease now for 31 years, and it has robbed him of everything. You know, his ability to earn and walk and ambulate, and move around, drive, everything. And most recently, John, it's taken his ability to speak. And very recently, he's struggling swallowing. So we can imagine where the thing goes. And you said, gosh, John, we're in the midst of the holiday season, and it's so easy to get sidetracked on the things we do not have rather than celebrating the things we do. And so years ago now, probably five, I was with my dad. He was struggling that day. He was in his wheelchair. You could just see he was in physical pain. And I said, Dad, why don't you complain? Everybody else does. Read the headlines. Follow anybody on social media. You will see how miserable everybody's life is and how horrible the nation and our nations are. And more at 10 o'clock, if you don't believe me. Like that's just the way the world is right now. And my dad is not programmed that way. So he looked back at me and he said, John, why would I complain when I have so much to be grateful for? So I said, Dad, give me three things you're grateful for Parkinson's. You know, just anything, man. Can you give me three things you're grateful for? Parkinson's disease. And he looked at me almost surprised, but then immediately he started speaking. He's got shallow breath and his voice is weak. But he said, John, I'm grateful it was not a more serious disease. It could have been bad, man. And he went on to say, I'm grateful for this time to reflect on who I am and where God is in my story. And I used to be so busy. Now I've got nothing but time to reflect on who I am, what matters most, and where God is. And the third and final thing he said was, John, I've always liked your mom. I said, dude, I'm glad you like mom. You know, you married her 53 years ago. I'm glad you like mom. He said, you're missing the point. Everyone else is bailing on me. You know, my coworkers, they no longer saw value in the way I showed up. And so they showed me the exit. My friends who used to come around for a round of golf or beer, that they're not coming around. Everyone else has kind of stiff-armed me toward the sideline of life. Except for mom, your mother. She just keeps coming closer and closer. I don't deserve it, but I love her and I'm grateful. And so, John, as we put a little bow on this, man, I stand up to walk and give my dad a big old hug. And he says to me, sit down. I'm not done. I'm not done. And so I sit down, and I won't go through all of the lists with your listeners today. I won't bore them back to sleep, you know, again, but the list included things like the time at home with six kids and 21 grandbabies, the ability to have a handicapped spot accessible to your mother and to me, the ability to connect more passionately and compassionately with others who have experienced their own hardship. He said, when I was on top of the world, I never really saw the needs of those who felt buried by it, but now I've joined them. And Johnny just went on and on and on, making this list of things in the midst of the storm that he's grateful for. And so you said, and the way you set up the question, it's holidays. And yet in the midst of the holidays, it's so easy to get sidetracked to only see the things we do not have. And I'm guilty of it too. So I'm not here to preach at you. I got to take my own medicine. But in this season, what an awesome time to reflect, not on the things we do not have, but on the litany, the list of expansive things that we have. Many of those things money cannot buy. So if you're looking for a list this holiday season, why not start with a list of things that you already possess?
That's so good, John. So rich. I mean, such good lessons learned and So, you know, I taking you back to your story. And so you're in the burn unit and, you know, and obviously you survived. I mean, we're talking today, right?
So buy the book, people. Yeah. Buy the book. It's a conclusion.
So, but I mean, so between that time and here you are, we're talking, you are a world-renowned speaker and author and, you know, inspirational in so many lives. And you're having a podcast, which is, you know, far richer than my podcast. And you have these devotionals that are coming out. But there is a point, and I want you to kind of unpack that for our listeners. You are in this area, in this crucible of suffering, and in this area of not even know if I'm going to survive. Was there a time and occasion where it's like, I recognize the purpose in the pain, and that I recognize that God's call on my life? And was there a period of time in transitioning from the child who's so fearful to the man that you, I mean, and that's, I know there's a lot in between there and giving you some time to think upon that, but what happened in there that said, this is why God created me.
Right. So there are two stories that jumped immediately, and they're not from my childhood, and they're not from my 16th birthday party or the 21st experience out with my buddies or anything like that. It was actually the first story that came to mind was age 28, and it's a two-parted story. But the first was in church on a Sunday. The pastor was preaching. Oh, gosh, I should know it. I think it's Matthew, but it's the parable of the talents. Yeah. And 5-3-1. And Jesus is reminding those that whatever you have, you are intended to double. And what I knew, John, as a little boy going through the fire and coming out of it without fingers and with scars and with a limp and with arms now locked at 90 degrees and struggling a little bit physically, is I was the guy with one talent. You know, it was one. It's not bad. I had one at least. But I had always assumed the best thing to do with one talent is to bury it. And so I spent two decades burying this one single talent that I had. And so he just gave this sermon that rocked me. And I realized, man, it doesn't really matter what you thought you had. You're called to do a lot more with it. And so that's in the background of my mind. And then midweek, I get a call. I'm working construction, which is an odd job to take on when you got burned as a kid. And I was a general contractor and a business owner and doing all these things professionally. But at the end of the day, distill it down, I'm a carpenter. That's what I did for a living. And my phone rang. So I flipped it open. And, you know, so that dates the story a little bit. And a little girl on the other side of the phone call says, Mr. O'Leary. So I said, oh, hey, hon, let me get you my dad's number. And she says, no, Mr. O'Leary, he gave me your number. Mr. O'Leary, I heard about your story when you were a little boy about my age. Would you share your story with my school? And dude, I'd never told anybody my story. Remember, I only had one talent and it wasn't really all that worthy. And I'd buried it for years. And so I never told anybody. But on that day, and I think partially fueled by that, by the sermon on Sunday, I said, sure. So we set a date together. And a couple of weeks later, this awkward, introverted, self-conscious nobody named John O'Leary walks into this classroom and thinking there's going to be 20 kids. There weren't. There were three. They were all Girl Scouts. They were looking down at, you know, doing whatever project was in front of them. I'm not sure they made eye contact with me. And I certainly did not make eye contact with them because I looked down at my notes the entire time. Was not even paid with a box of Samoas for my effort. But that's the coming out party, man. That's my first time speaking and sharing the one talent. And one of the dads, one of the room dads in the room said, oh gosh, John, that was convicting, man. Would you share with my Rotary Club? And now I'm trying to get in the habit of saying yes, you know, kind of going back to you and me on this podcast. Yeah. I just want to serve. So I said, yes. So we did that. And then one of those guys was in Rotary and Qantas. And then one of those guys ran a super small organization, like six employees, and it just went one to one. And that's how you've always changed the world. You know, who did Jesus start with? The rabbis and big old synagogues packed? No, man, one. And usually the least among is his arm around a woman saying, that's right. You are not married. And now you're with your sixth husband. Like, so I think the way you change the world is not in mass. It's one to one, doing it well, using whatever talents you've been gifted to serve those around you. So that's the first story I thought of, and the second, and I'll be far briefer on this one. The second is sort of like it. You said, John, when did you realize that God was using this story for a cause? Yeah. When did you realize that? And it's something I'm realizing every day. But most recently, I was speaking, you know, sometimes it's in front of huge organizations like where you and I met. Sometimes it's in massive stadiums, but frequently the work we do, the best of the work we do is one-to-one, and it's done quietly. And so I'm speaking in Southern Missouri to a group of maybe 30 or so kids who got burned themselves. No fanfare, no cameras, no microphones, no need for all that stuff. It's just a couple kids and a couple of counselors and now a speaker doing life together. And I'm sharing my story of hardship and heartache and ultimately redemption and recognizing ultimately the beauty of the scars. And there's this little girl that comes up to me afterwards, and she'd been there for 4 days, John, up to this point in Southern Missouri in July. And she'd worn for all 4 days a hooded sweatshirt. And dude, I never share this story, but it's good. Yeah. So she's got the hooded sweatshirt on. She's got the long sleeves on. And not only are the long sleeves on, they're covered over her hands. She doesn't want to show anybody anything. Yeah. And after she hears the story of another guy who hid his scars for a long time, this beautiful girl took off the hoodie and she exposes the scars on her face. And then she even pulls them back, this hair that's covering the brokenness. And she shows me her cheeks and her missing ear. And I'm like, gosh, you got a beautiful face. And then she pulls back her sleeve and her hand is missing. And what she'd been hiding from for 4.5 days was the fact that she was just busted. And she pulled this back. And as she did so, rather than looking sheepishly at me, she had this goofy grin and this sense of empowerment, just the ability to embrace the fullness of her story. And man, we got a picture together that day, and I have my right broken hand up toward the camera, and she's got her right hand broken toward the camera, and we both have these goofy grins on our face, and it's this picture of freedom. You know, like what kid doesn't want that? What burn victim doesn't cry for that? But don't kid yourself. If you think the story John and I are talking about right now is about burn care, you've completely missed the mark. This is not at all about burn victims. This is about victory. This is about God using your story for something a lot bigger than maybe you've allowed it to be used in the past. And so in my office in the boardroom, there's a picture of a little girl named Soraya. And it reminds John O'Leary and his coaching staff and his entire team and anybody that comes into the board what freedom looks like. That's what you're called to do, man. You got one talent. Hey, it's enough. Use it. You got three. Yeah. It's more than I got. Use them. You got five. God bless you. It's way more than we've been blessed with. Use them. For something bigger than yourself.
Yeah, that's kind of the nature of my podcast. And, you know, not to talk about what the podcast is for, but so many people have gifts or talents and abilities, and they put them in the closet. And God didn't give them to us for that. God wants to go to use us to fully express who He's created us to be. I, you know, is there a time and a season, a moment, John, where, like, you know, Eric Liddell's famous quote of when I run, I feel God's pleasure. Is there when are you in that zone of just realizing I was made for this purpose and I am experiencing God's pleasure moving through me by doing this?
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of that?
As frequently as possible. Which is a lame answer to your beautiful question, but my mission statement, the thing that gets me up early and keeps me up late and puts a goofy grin on my face all day. And it's not drug induced. It's authentic, man. I'm mainlining through faith life. So my mission statement, the reason I choose to thrive and make a difference in whatever role you find me in today, being your guest, I choose to thrive because God demands it. My family deserves it. The world is starved for it. Yeah. Let's roll. Yeah. No excuses.
Yeah.
So you can hear like, that's pretty darn broad, man. So when you were asking the question, the first thing I thought of was actually last night late. It's cold. I live up in St. Louis. It's cold this week. And my little girl asked me after a long day, Dad, will you go outside and shoot baskets with me? Her name is Grace. She's 10. She just got into basketball. And to be honest with you, dude, it's cold. I'm wearing flip-flops. Yeah. I'm tired. It's the last thing in the world I want to do. And I looked back at her and said, yes, Yeah, that sounds awesome. Yes.
So we go outside, we get balls, it's dark, it's freezing. She's into a game called knockout last night. Like, that's the game. You stand at the free throw line, the first person shoots, the next person shoots, you try to beat the guy in front of you, you get your rebound, you go back, you try to, and so it's just being filled with activity and you're running. And the first game, I beat her. And I felt God's pleasure when I beat my 10-year-old. I'm shooting underhand with no fingers. And then the second game, she beats me. And I'm fist bumping this little girl. And she's got this goofy grin. She's got rimmed glasses, blonde hair. And I feel God's pleasure as she beats me. And so the first thing I thought of, when that happens. Right before we went live with you, I got a text from a little girl named Soraya. She's the one I met in July. She's the one who's been out of school for 2 years. She's the one that my coaching staff and I have consistently loved on, which is another way of saying continue to beat down until finally she recognized your call to go back to school and do more. So we got a text yesterday saying, I finally am signed back up to go to school, Mr. John. So like, yes, Soraya, that is so good. I promise you, when you finally went in, I'm taking you back out to lunch. So she and I have had lunch now a couple times. So we just set a date right before you and I went live where I'm coming back down. She lives a couple hours away from me. I'm going to buy her lunch. We're going to fist bump. We're going to smile. We're going to make her Christmas. Everything on her list is going to come true. She does not expect that, but I've worked behind the scenes with her mom to find out for a family that is not as financially well-to-do right now as maybe some of my friends and I are, we are able to help her do this. And so I cannot wait to love this little girl and to just pour into her and to remind her how valuable she is still. So that's when I felt God's pleasure in my life. And I feel it when I speak, when I do podcasts, when I'm interviewed. I'm about to meet a friend of mine for lunch who lost his son due to suicide a couple of years ago. And I'm just going to talk life with him and encourage him and listen to him. And so you asked the question for a time, and man, I hopefully from sun up to sundown, like in everything we do, you know, I think St. Francis says, preach the gospel always and sometimes use words.
Yeah,
man. Same here. Preach the gospel always. And I, as a speaker, sometimes use words, but feel God's grace passionately in your life. Sometimes with your family, sometimes with your wife, sometimes with a cup of wine, sometimes with a glass of coffee. But as frequently as possible, feel God's life pouring, coursing through your veins in order to influence a marketplace that is longing for it.
Oh, that's so rich and so good, John. So yeah, what's coming up for you? What are you looking forward to in 2022? Is there, are you back on tour? Or, you know, what's going on in your life that you're looking forward to?
Yeah. I mean, so this whole thing began by saying yes to three Girl Scouts and it has turned into this movement, man. I've spoken live to a couple million people. We do a whole lot of virtual work. So a lot of folks, organizations these days with COVID are inviting us virtually to come in through that manner to extend that. We created the Live Inspired podcast. We've got a coaching arm. We do a whole lot of social media and books on fire and in awe, among others. So all those things are part of the work we do today. But what I'm actually most excited about is we're just trying to serve kids now, you know? So like this little Soraya is one of more than a dozen names that I could drop into your listeners' arsenal to share like what they've been through, how we, by chance, I think it's all grace, but by chance met them, how we encouraged them, how we came back into their world. When I was with you, and I think it was in San Antonio when you and I first met live, and shared the story of Jack Buck and his influence in life and what he did. And it's unbelievable. But this announcer, ultimately, if you distill the story of greatness down to ultimately tactically what he did four things really well. When the request came in, he said yes. And then he showed up. And then he came back. And then he brought friends.
Yeah.
So what I want to do in 2022 for not only the 12 or so that we're currently serving, but a whole lot more, and maybe with your listeners' help, tell us the needs that is out there. Because when you send us the need, I promise you, we will say yes, we will show up, we will come back, we will bring friends. And I don't want to monetize that. I want to make a difference through that. I want to be ultimately remembered by living that. So what I'm most excited about in 2022 is not speaking or virtual work or coaching or podcasting or all this other work, which I love. I love my work. But I want to be remembered for serving one well and then doing that again and then again and again.
John, I am blown away by your life. I am so thankful for your life. I mean, for your example to me. I'm just humbled to you and just listen to you. And I told you, and it's true, you have made a difference in my life. I mean, I'm just a guy trying to serve the Lord and try to take my talent as best that I can and you know, count on God to use it and make a difference. And I want to tell you that you have been instrumental in energizing me to do that. So praise be to the Lord. So if somebody wants to get information from you, I mean, how do they connect with you? What's the best way to get engaged with your work and your ministry?
Awesome. And there's a book on my nightstand. I read it years ago, but it remains there to remind me of the truth within it. John MacArthur wrote a book called 12 Ordinary Men.
Yeah.
And for the ladies listening, 12 Ordinary Ladies too, right? 12 Ordinary yeah. Men. So just recognize this is not a gender deal. This is a calling deal. And it's a yes. So if you're looking for a book like, hey, I don't think I can do this through my life, I only have one talent, read the book 12 Ordinary Men. And if you want to stay in touch with me, I would love it. You can go to a website where we have a whole lot of this condensed down. It's called readinawe.com. So readinawe.com. And once you're on that site, you'll see a 21-day hope challenge. It's free. It's cool. So check that out. You'll see a link to our podcast and a couple of our books. And if you go through all of it, you'll see our number and our text line. And my phone number and my email address. And the whole idea here is to build relationships and do life together. So I'm looking forward, John, not only to serving you in times to come, but also maybe a couple of your friends might want to reach out and do life together. I'm excited about that.
Oh, man. You were so generous with your time. I know it took us a while to connect, but I was that guy in the room with, I don't know, 1,000 people on it. And you said, hey, let's connect. And I sent you a note and you responded. I was like, I can't believe it. I told Devin that.
It takes me a while sometimes, but we are committed to it. And I'm grateful for your patience.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on, John. It's been a pleasure to get to know you a little bit more. I hope to get to know you even better as the years would come on, and maybe we can meet face to face someday. So God bless you, and God be with you and go with you in all that you do.
I look forward to 60 feet down to a Zoom call, ultimately down to a hug. So until then, John, continue bold.
All right. Thanks
for listening to this podcast of Fully Expressed with your host, John Dembeck. If you'd like to receive John's newsletter or find out more about Work and Faith Matters, go to workandfaithmatters.org. That's workandfaithmatters.org.